We are going to talk about salt this hour with a guest who says salt has gotten a bad rap. While dietary guidelines have recommended we restrict our intake of salt for health reasons, our guest, who is the author of the book The Salt Fix, says we probably should eat more of it. We'll find out why. We'll welcome your questions and your love-hate relationship with salt. Have you been urged to cut down on your salt intake? Do you rebel against that? I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Our conversation is prompted by a recent NPR story. Has salt gotten an unfair shake? And our guest was interviewed for that story. We've posted the story on the new The Ideas Network Facebook page, where you can read it and post a comment or a question, or you can call us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Let me welcome our guest. Dr. James DiNicolantonio is a cardiovascular research scientist at the St. Luke's Mid-America Heart Institute and a doctor of pharmacy. His research focuses on cardiovascular health and disease, specifically diabetes, obesity, hypertension, and more. He is the author or co-author of more than 120 medical publications, opinion pieces, review articles. He recently wrote the book, The Salt Fix, Why the Experts Got It Wrong and How Eating More Might Save Your Life. Good morning.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, you know, I'm going to, in the spirit of full disclosure, let everyone know that I love salt. I adore salt. I salt everything. I love salty snacks. I put salt on food sometimes before I taste it. But you know, then I feel guilty about that because everybody tells me that eating too much salt is bad for me. But you're saying it's not really bad for me.
Right. So salt is an essential mineral, and basically our bodies drive us to consume an optimal amount per day because we need it. And if we don't get enough, we can suffer numerous health consequences. And really the problem why people think salt is bad is because everybody thinks we're getting too much because it's in processed foods and it's all around us. But in my book, The Salt Fix, I show how millions of people are at risk of salt deficiency by either drinking too much caffeine or going on low-carb diets, or we lose salt through sweat, and there's all these other disease states and medications that cause us to be depleted in salt. And so I kind of go in the book of what some of the symptoms are of salt deficiency and why actually we may need more salt.
Well, so what about all these, dietary health guidelines that say, hey, limit your intake of sodium? Why do you say that those guidelines are wrong?
Yeah, so one of the most non-evidence-based recommendations is dietary advice, because it all stems 4 years ago when we didn't have really any type of solid evidence. And so it all comes back to the 1977 dietary goals, where all Americans were given 6 dietary recommendations. They were told to eat a high-carb, low-fat diet and also a low-salt diet. And so that low-salt dogma has just carried over for the last 40 years. There's never been any definitive proof that cutting your salt intake will prevent cardiovascular events. And if you look at the longest-living populations like Japan, South Korea, they actually eat the highest amounts of salt around the world. So there's never been any good evidence to actually recommend low-salt diets.
Well, then how did this happen? Why are they telling us to limit it if there's no good evidence to limit it?
So, yeah, what ended up happening is basically when the first guidelines were put out back in the late 70s, there was only about studies in a couple hundred people, and they had pretty severe hypertension or high blood pressure. And what they did was they extrapolated the blood pressure lowering effects in that minority and said, this is going to happen to everybody. And they actually assumed that that reduction in blood pressure would lead to a reduction in strokes and heart attacks. But it was only an assumption, no proof. And just because A leads to B, low-salt diets might lead to low blood pressure in certain people, doesn't mean that that will translate into a reduction in C or cardiovascular events.
Yeah, I was going to say, there were participants in a recent study with the highest intake of sodium and potassium actually had significantly lower blood pressure. So a new study said that those who had more sodium and potassium had lower blood pressure. This was an analysis presented earlier this year at the American Society for Nutrition's Scientific Sessions meeting in Chicago. The group with the lowest blood pressure averaged a daily sodium intake of 3.7 grams a day, far higher than the guidelines suggested. So what's going on there?
So what it tells you is it's really all about balance, right? We shouldn't just be focusing on one mineral, salt, but actually salt contains two minerals, sodium and chloride, but we need to be focusing on the entire dietary pattern. And so in my book, really what I'm recommending is people need to use salt to eat an overall healthy dietary pattern, which gives them higher amounts of potassium and magnesium, which will balance out the higher amounts of salt. And so that's kind of how the Japanese and the South Koreans and even the Mediterranean diet, how they're eating healthy, eating high amounts of salt, living long with low rates of heart disease, is because they're eating real food and using salt to taste. And that's the key.
Yeah, so you have to have potassium and magnesium along with that salt to make it all better?
Yeah, so basically, you know, most people in the United States are only consuming about 2 grams of potassium, whereas the World Health Organization recommends we should be consuming more than twice that, or about 4.7 grams. And so, you know, I use salt to get my kids to eat real food. Like, my kids will not eat vegetables or nuts or seeds if I don't put salt on it, but people are so afraid of this natural substance that they would rather eat low-salt processed foods, thinking it's healthy for their children or for themselves. And really, that's the wrong message. You want to use salt as a gateway to not only eating healthy, but also exercising more. And so in the book, I show how eating more salt before exercise can dramatically improve, you know, performance and reduce the risk of circulatory collapse and heat stroke. And exercising and eating healthy is the best thing that anyone can do for their health. And if salt allows them to do more of that, you know, what's better than using a natural substance like salt to do that?
We are talking with James DeNicolantonio, who is the author of The Salt Fix, Why the Experts Got It All Wrong, and How Eating More Might Save Your Life. We're welcoming your questions for him, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. So do you try to limit your salt intake? Why or why not? What sort of reputation does salt have in your home? Has salt affected your health in any way? Let us know your questions and experiences. Neil on Facebook says, my blood pressure was staying too high until I left off salting my morning oatmeal. That's the only real change I made to my diet. So how would you explain that, James?
Yeah, so in the book, The Salt Fix, I kind of show certain situations that cause people to over-retain salt, where they've either over-consumed the other white crystal sugar, causing them to over-retain salt, or there's certain other disease states that can lead to salt retention. And so really the key is to figure out what the underlying cause is of why salt is causing your blood pressure to increase, because that's not supposed to happen. And we know that's not supposed to happen because our blood is extremely salty. And if we eat too much salt, the kidneys can just easily get rid of it. And so if you are swelling up or your blood pressure is going higher, a lot of times there's three different things that are happening, but there could be more. But the main things are, one is insulin resistance, generally from over-consuming refined carbs and sugar. The other is having Cushing syndrome, which leads to elevations in cortisol levels, which causes people to over-retain salt. The other is high aldosterone levels. So some people have benign tumors on their adrenal glands, causing them to over-secrete a hormone called aldosterone, which is, of course, a salt-retaining hormone. And so discovering why your body is not able to handle salt rather than restricting an essential mineral is the smarter choice.
Yeah. So what led to your interest in researching salt?
Well, that's a great question. So when I was working as a community pharmacist, I had many patients that, you know, had high blood pressure, and they were coming up to me saying, you know, I was put on this low-salt diet, but now I'm having symptoms of dizziness. I can't work out like I used to. I get fatigued very easily. I'm having heart palpitations, lightheadedness. I almost collapse going from a seated to a standing position. And so when I recommend, there's always side effects to any type of advice. So when I was seeing that in the community, you know, I pushed back and I said, listen, you should go to your doctor, tell them the symptoms that you're having, and have them measure your blood sodium levels. And sure enough, these people had very low sodium levels in the blood, and all their symptoms went away as soon as their doctor either cut their diuretic in half or removed their diuretic or told them to start adding salt back to their diet. So I was seeing dramatic, quick improvements from people actually just listening to their own bodies instead of consciously restricting their salt intake. And so that really got me interested into actually researching what the evidence was and writing the book.
We are talking about salt with a guest who says salt has gotten a bad rap. And we're wondering if you have any questions for him or any experiences you'd like to share. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. We'll check news and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. For many decades, health guidelines have warned against eating too much salt, claiming it is linked with high blood pressure and poor cardiovascular health and other health problems. However, our guest says it's a time to rethink that. He says that salt has gotten a bad reputation unfairly and is talking about how salt is actually good for us. And we are welcoming your questions and wondering what your reaction is to this. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is James D. Nicolantonio, a cardiovascular research scientist at St. Luke's Mid-America Heart Institute. He's also a doctor of pharmacy, and he is the author of The Salt Fix, Why the Experts Got It All Wrong and How Eating More Might Save Your Life. We discovered him and his book in a recent NPR story that caught our eye. It was on salt and whether salt has gotten an unfair shake. And it reviewed a lot of research that said, hey, maybe salt isn't as bad as we thought it was. And so, James, I've been mentioning that you say salt has been given a bad rap. You're not entirely alone in that. In that, the research is showing more and more that maybe it's not as bad as we thought.
Yeah, so really all the research that's been coming out lately is showing that people who are consuming the lowest amounts of salt, basically less than a teaspoon a day, which is really what everyone is recommended to consume, are at the highest risk of cardiovascular events and early death. And part of the reason for that is because when we cut our salt intake below a teaspoon, we get increases in cholesterol, triglycerides, all our stress hormones like noradrenaline and adrenaline increase, artery stiffening hormones increase. And so when you combine all of those harms, including an increase in heart rate, the lowering in blood pressure never had a chance. And so that's why we're seeing all these studies come out showing that people who are consuming the lowest amounts of salt are at the highest risk of heart disease.
But an article in the Guardian last month said that a lot of public health experts in the UK are speaking out against your book and your claim, saying that this advice could endanger people's health. What do you say to that?
Right. And so the first thing I would say is we know that the longest living people, Japan and South Korea, could consume the highest amounts of salt. We know the Mediterranean diet, which reduces cardiovascular events, is a high-salt diet. It's full of seafood. Just 7 ounces of clams can give you a full teaspoon of salt. It contains cheese, soups, olives, so all these salty foods. And so my book is telling people to use salt to eat real food. And so in my opinion, there's nothing about that that's putting anyone in harm's way, and it should actually be improving the health of the population.
1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. If you have a question about salt or the an experience that you'd like to share, whether or not you're being urged to eat less salt, or whether you're rebelling against that. Tom in Cedarburg is with us. Hi, Tom.
Morning, Joy. I just want to say that I'm going to miss hearing you in the morning, and as I'm sure most of your listeners will, your intelligent, calming, pleasant voice.
You're very kind, Tom. Thank you very much.
It's so true. As for salt, your guest is so right. It's without it, life stops. And my question is, I read quite a bit about sea salt, and it's supposed to have like 70 nutrients or more versus processed salt or mined salt, which has got like 3. And is sea salt really the way to go unless you're allergic to it for some reason?
James?
Yeah, that's a great question. So actually in my book, The Salt Fix, I actually have a huge comparison of all the, you know, most common sea salts that are out there. And really my favorite is, it's called Redmond Real Salt. And the reason why I like Redmond so much is because where it's actually sourced. It's sourced from an ancient ocean. And so you don't have to worry about the microplastics and the potential pollution and heavy metals that can be found from sea salts from modern-day oceans. And so that's one of the reasons why I like that particular salt. But I also like Redmond Real Salt because it's good amounts of iodine and it has good amounts of calcium. And we actually lose a considerable amount of both iodine, calcium, and salt in our sweat when we exercise. So there are good salts out there that can help replace the minerals that we lose during sweat.
Yeah, Christine from Appleton had a similar question and wondered if there was a particular kind of salt to avoid or a particular kind of salt that is better for us. I guess you said this Redmond Real Salt is good, but are there salts on the market that you would say, hey, forget about that?
Yeah, so I mean, if you're gonna consume a salt, right? I mean, any salt is better than not getting enough. But table salt does have some negatives, and one of them is how it's processed. So they do add dextrose to table regular old table salt. It is bleached white, and it is highly refined and processed with high heat. So if you're gonna use salt, you know, you do want to try to find these more ancient sourced salts because you are, you know, avoiding that type of processing and refinement. So, you know, my favorite is Redmond for those reasons I kind of just mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Let's go next to Benjamin in De Pere. Hi, Benjamin.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning again.
Well, good morning, Benjamin. What is your question or story about salt?
No. My story is about 10 years ago, I had rental property in Leadville, South Philly Pier, and I was doing a deck, and redoing some decks. And it was a hot day, and I took some water intake, but not enough salt, and I got sick. But the next day, I was really sick, and because then our neighbor was a nurse instructor at one of the local hospitals, and she indicated that it would be lack of salt.
Mm-hmm.
So I checked into a local hospital, and his trouble due to BM, so forth, all kinds of issues physically. And I'm in good shape otherwise, very good shape, no health problems whatsoever. However,
what did you suffer when you were out in the hot sun working and not getting in? I mean, did you pass out or?
No, I didn't pass out. I was got tired, weak.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I couldn't do a BM, and it was very tired. And
apparently the lack of salt caused Benjamin to get sick, according to the nurse who was helping him. James, you hear about also runners who are running and sweating and actually drinking too much water. Can you talk about that danger?
Yeah, it's actually a significant problem. So up to 20% of people who are running marathons or triathlons, they finish the race with low sodium levels in the blood. And the reason is they're replacing water, but they're not getting enough salt. And the reason is there's not a single sports drink that I'm aware of that contains the level of salt that's in your sweat. It's about, so if you look at Gatorade and Powerade, they only have about a quarter of the amount of salt that's contained in your sweat per liter. And so You know, sweat is about 1,200 milligrams, or about a half a teaspoon of salt per liter. And we sweat out about a half a teaspoon of salt per hour of exercise. But if you look at, like, Gatorade and Powerade, they only contain about 350 milligrams of sodium. So you're missing out on another, let's say, 800 milligrams of sodium constantly every hour that you're being depleted. And so if you don't get enough salt, salt allows people's blood circulation to improve. It increases blood volume. It dilates the arteries. It increases sweat production, which is how we cool off. And so salt is very important for people who are sweating, they're out in the heat, or they're exercising. And dosing with salt, I've seen dramatic benefits. And really, when you dose yourself with salt before exercise and you realize what the benefits are, you're going to ask yourself, why did I not do this before?
So how do you dose yourself?
What I do is I take about a half a teaspoon of Redmond Real Salt. I put it in a cup. I add just a little bit of lemon juice, just enough to coat it. And then I put about 2 ounces of water. And I create like this little lemon shot. And I just, you know, take it really quick, about 20 minutes before I work out. And very simple. And, you know, people that are, there was a massive heat wave this summer that affected India. It affected the western coast of the United States. It affected the UK. And people were dying of what they call heat stroke. But really what it is, what people are dying of when they say heat stroke, it's really just salt deficiency. They're not getting enough salt. And so, you know, it's a significant problem.
You say, and you mentioned it earlier, and I didn't follow up because we had someone else to talk to. You said that it's sugar that is really the bigger problem. Talk a little bit about the underpinnings of the idea that that salt, not sugar, is to blame for our widespread health woes.
So if you just look throughout history and you compare the intake of salt and sugar, back several hundred years ago, even back 10,000 years ago, we consumed up to 10 times the amount of salt that we do today. And so because salt was our main food preservative, we didn't have refrigerators, and everything was salted in order to, you know, preserve our food. And so, you know, the ancient Romans consumed 5 times the amount of salt we did. In the 1600s in Sweden, they consumed up to 100 grams of salt. We don't even consume 10 grams of salt nowadays. And when you look at the rise in sugar intake the last few hundred years, the intake of sugar in the 1700s in Europe and even in the United States was only a few pounds per person per year. And now we're consuming over 100 pounds of sugar per person per year. And at the same time of that rise, that 30-fold increase in sugar intake, we had, you know, quadrupling of diabetes, tripling of obesity and diabetes. And during that time, we actually had a fall in salt intake. So there's never even been any link of the rise in chronic disease with a rise in salt intake. It's always been a rise in sugar intake. And sugar is not essential. We don't need to consume a single gram of exogenous sugar to live, but we need salt. And so just from a physiological perspective, salt is necessary, sugar is not. And when we consume sugar, most people think of sugar as just empty calories and that they can just burn it off if they consume too much of it by exercising more. The problem is sugar is very inflammatory. When the intestinal cells metabolize it, when it hits our liver, it actually causes inflammation in fatty liver. And so people need to know that sugar is really the white crystal that is the harmful one, and salt has been taking the fall for sugar for all these years. And in my book, I even show how not getting enough salt can potentially increase the risk of sugar addiction.
And how does that happen?
So one of the body's ways of preventing salt deficiency is by activating the reward system. So if we're deficient in salt and we get it in the diet, we get a better reward from it that causes us to consume more of it. And that's how animals know to go to salt licks when they're deficient in salt. The problem is if we're not getting enough salt or we are being depleted of salt, that activation in our reward system can be hijacked by the other white crystal, sugar. And so sugar is more rewarding when we are deficient in salt because of that activated reward center in the brain.
Interesting. What if you're like me and you love salt and you love sugar?
That's a good point. Well, the thing is salt is kind of the antidote to sugar. And so people have always struggled, a lot of people struggle with sugar addiction, and they want to know some ways to help them. How do I get cut back on sugar? Because it's so addictive and it's so tasty, and I never want to stop. And one of the ways is to use salt to eat healthy foods, to fix your physiology, to fix your brain chemistry. And bringing that healthy salt back to the table can help people kind of reduce their sugar intake. And really, the love for salt is a good love. Our cravings for salt are controlled. We should embrace those cravings, whereas the cravings for sugar are completely different because that is a non-essential nutrient, whereas salt is an essential mineral.
It's interesting. I did go on a sugar fast recently, and I was successful in doing that. But I just want to make sure I'm clear. So you're saying that low salt eating makes sugar even more addictive?
Yeah, even in animal studies, they've shown that when they deplete them of salt, it actually increases the risk of becoming addicted to drugs like Adderall, like cocaine. And because your salt cravings are hardwired to your brain. And if you're not getting enough salt, that brain hardwiring it basically goes on overdrive. So you make sure you get the salt that you need. Salt tastes better when you're deficient in it. And sugar can hijack that activated reward system, and drugs of abuse can also do the same thing. So not getting enough salt may actually even increase the risk of drug addiction.
That's interesting. So how much salt do we really need?
It basically, everyone's different. Because some people consume a lot of caffeine, just 4 cups of coffee can cause us to lose over a teaspoon of salt in the urine. And just exercising for 1 hour in the heat can cause us to lose over a full teaspoon of salt. So in the book, I kind of show all these things that cause salt loss and all these disease states. Millions of people have undiagnosed sleep apnea. 20 million people in America, and they lose twice the amount of salt at night, which is why they're up peeing at night all the time. And, you know, 22 million Americans have some type of thyroid issue, and most of them being hypothyroidism, which is low thyroid. And people who are low on thyroid don't reabsorb salt well and lose salt. And so there's millions of people who have inflammatory bowel disease, like Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis. They don't absorb salt in their intestinal tract very well. And so luckily, we have this great built-in system in our brains that increases our cravings of salt when we're not getting enough. So the answer to your question is people need to really listen to their own personal salt cravings, because someone who isn't absorbing salt well, they may need to consume 20 grams of salt because they barely absorb it, whereas some person might be over-consuming sugar and they might absorb too much salt and they might need to reduce it. So it really just depends on the person.
Well, so is there a danger, though, given all you've said, of consuming too much salt?
Well, let's put it this way. They've done trials to try to see how much salt is too much salt for a normal, healthy person. They've given over 10 times a normal salt intake in clinical studies, and it just comes out the urine with barely an increase in blood pressure. So if someone has normal blood pressure, consuming even very high amounts of salt doesn't seem to be that big of an issue. But if you do have certain disease states where you are over-retaining salt and you have dramatic rises in blood pressure when you consume it, then that could be an issue. But again, we want to find the underlying cause and fix that, not restrict an essential mineral, because salt has all these really important properties. So salt is composed of sodium and chloride. And chloride is a part of our stomach acid, hydrochloric acid. So if you're not getting enough salt, you're not getting enough chloride, you don't have enough hydrochloric acid to digest food, to absorb nutrients, and to fend off bacterial infections in the stomach. And so salt is very, very important. And that's why I really always very caution anyone really that consciously restricts their salt intake because of the importance of this nutrient.
Our guest is James DeNichel Antonio, a cardiovascular research scientist at St. Luke's Mid-America Heart Institute, a doctor of pharmacy, author of The Salt Fix, who says that we shouldn't be restricting our salt intake. We probably should be increasing it. What do you say after this news? You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with a guest about salt. Our guest says that salt has an undeserved bad rap, and he's trying to make the case for not only not restricting our sodium or salt intake, but increasing it. And we wonder what you think, what questions you have. We do have open lines. I'm kind of surprised. Aren't you among those of us who have been told to limit your salt intake? Have you taken the salt shaker off of your table to try to reduce your amount of sodium or salt? Our guest is saying that more and more research is showing that salt is not the bad guy here. And we're welcoming your questions, and we're welcoming your experiences. We're welcoming your salt shaker habits. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. As mentioned, our conversation is prompted by a recent NPR story. Has salt gotten an unfair shake? We have posted that story on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can post a comment or question there as well. We have the new Ideas Network Facebook page, in part because the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page is going to be retiring when I retire at the end of the month. So check out the new Ideas Network Facebook page as well and give it a like or a follow, because that's where all the action is going to be. Our guest is James DiNicolantonio, a cardiovascular research scientist at St. Luke's Mid-America Heart Institute, a doctor of pharmacy, author of the book, The Salt Fix, Why the Experts Got It All Wrong and How Eating More Might Save Your Life. So now our lines are full, but as we get our callers ready to go on air, James, what are the basics of what you call the salt fix?
Yeah, so the basics of the salt fix is to, A, find a really healthy salt that isn't refined, that has good amounts of other minerals like Redmond real salt. The other basic is to use that salt to eat healthy foods. We also want, the third kind of step is to eat real salty foods like clams, lobster, crab that bring good omega-3s, but also bring good amounts of salt. Like there's other foods like cheese, olives, pickles, things like that. So eating real foods that are salty. The other is to use salt to reduce the amount of sugar that people are kind of having issues with. And we kind of just discussed how low salt can actually increase our risk of sugar cravings. And the other is to identify all the salt-depleting things in your life, like caffeine, low-carb diets, exercise, and to kind of supplement the salt before you get depleted in it.
Did you tell me I have to give up my coffee?
No, I actually put a little pinch of mineral salt in my coffee, just a little bit, and that actually sometimes helps to cut out the bitterness.
Interesting, because I love coffee, and I think that might be one of the, I can kind of see myself in a lot of what you're saying here, because I drink a lot of coffee in the morning. I get up really, really early, and I do exercise quite a bit, I'm probably losing some of my salt in my sweat. And I, like I said, I love salt, but I've been kind of feeling guilty because I love to salt things, and I'm trying to cut back on it. And you essentially are telling me that I don't need to feel guilty about putting that salt on real food.
Yeah, I mean, that was honestly one of the biggest reasons why I wrote the book, The Salt Fix, is because I personally was feeling guilty as well. And so once I discovered the research, and, you know, I've published a lot about this research as well, you know, I didn't feel as guilty, and I started realizing, you know, when I'm drinking my coffee in the morning and I'm running to the bathroom, I'm losing a lot of salt. And so, you know, we need to not fear it, and we need to trust those salt cravings.
Yeah. Let's take a call from Kyle in Wauwatosa. Hi, Kyle.
Hi. Hey, my question is, about 4 months ago, I had bariatric surgery, and I had the bypass surgery. And ever since then, I have craved salt like you would not believe. So I was wondering if that malabsorption from the bypass surgery is actually causing a deficiency in salt.
Well, I don't know if you can...
Absolutely, bariatric surgery can, because you lose some of the intestine, It can absolutely reduce the amount of salt that you absorb, and it actually reduces the amount of many other minerals. A lot of people after bariatric surgery are deficient in magnesium, copper, zinc, and so most people who are put, you know, after bariatric surgery are given a multivitamin and mineral, but sometimes it's not even enough that you need to get measurements to see that you're even absorbing enough. So absolutely, that's how smart our bodies are, is that when you're not getting enough, you're going to crave more salt. And instead of listening to a guideline, you need to take this advice. You're a real person. Things are happening to you outside of these guidelines, and you should not consciously restrict your salt intake.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up, too, though, when you said eat healthy, real foods and salt those healthy, real foods. That means that I shouldn't get increase my salt intake by eating lots more potato chips and popcorn and salty snacks?
Right, exactly. We don't want to up our processed food intake. We want to use the salt to eat those healthy, bitter foods that we never would have consumed without the salt. And so how I use salt is, I use salt to eat more bitter greens. Like, I really don't like the taste of spinach, but if I put salt on it, I'll end up eating it every day. And most people are deficient in magnesium and potassium, and spinach is like a nice source of those minerals. And so that's really how I use salt.
Yeah, it does really improve the taste of vegetables. It improves the taste of a whole lot of things. Do you know why that is?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is why salt tastes good is because it's one of our five tastes, but it's also an essential mineral. And so the reason why things taste better when we salt it is because salt is flavor. It's not just a mineral, it's also flavor. And so we have these taste receptors on our tongues for both sodium and chloride, and that provides a nice rewarding sensation. But unlike salt, where if we get too much, the taste receptors for salt will actually flip if you get too much, providing you a nice aversion signal. And everybody knows that. If they get too much salt, the foods taste too salty afterwards, but not with sugar. The taste receptors for sugar do not flip, and the more sugar you consume, the more you crave.
David on Facebook asks, does eating a lot of salt cause you to retain water?
So in the majority of people, it does not, because what ends up happening in the kidneys is the kidneys actually have to actively, using a lot of energy, reabsorb the 3.5 pounds that it filters every single day. So if you consume more salt, it's actually a relief on the kidneys. They can just let any free salt that they don't eat pass. They don't have to actively reabsorb it. The problem comes is certain people who have certain kidney diseases where they retain too much salt, where that can be an issue.
Let's go next to Mary in La Crosse. Hi, Mary.
Hi. There are so many things I want to say, but I was limited here. Number one, a lot of these symptoms that you've been saying, I have, and I'm going through the vestibular therapy stuff now because of dizziness. But in April, I had to complete all this testing done and my sodium, and I don't understand these numbers. 135, it says latest reference, RNG and units.
Mary, I'm going to jump in because it's really very confusing to the layperson listening if you're going to read lab results. Maybe, can I get James, and I don't think you should be, diagnosing or interpreting personal lab results over the air. Can you give us an idea? Mary, can you just, are you saying that your sodium levels, according to your blood work, are low or high or what?
No, actually, they're right in the middle. The 135 to 146 is what it says you should have. Mine's 139.
Okay.
But still, I'm craving salt, but still I'm limiting it. And so...
Yeah, all right. So, James, what about... She's right in the middle of I guess, what she says is the normal range. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, so sodium levels in the blood don't necessarily tell you if you have salt deficiency. And the reason is because the body will fight and do whatever it can to maintain a normal sodium level. Otherwise, that can lead to basically swelling in the brain and death. And so you can absolutely be deficient in salt and have a completely normal blood sodium level. And so symptomatically, is your symptoms, if they are fixed, your dizziness, your lightheadedness, by upping your salt intake, that's kind of telling you that maybe you're deficient in salt. And there are some other lab measurements that people can look at that can potentially indicate salt deficiency. And one of them is called a BUN, or blood urea nitrogen, a very common test done on almost every lab work. And really, if that is elevated and you're consuming normal amounts of water, that can indicate salt deficiency, because what an elevated BUN, how that occurs, is when you don't have enough blood flow to the kidneys, your urea, which is, you know, a byproduct and gets excreted in the urine, it goes up. And when you don't have enough salt, you don't get good blood flow to the kidneys. And so an elevated BUN of like 20 or above may potentially indicate salt deficiency, but certainly your symptoms are the best, you know, marker for treatment than any type of blood or lab work.
All right. I'm sorry, Mary, did you have a follow-up?
No, I guess that takes care of that question. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. We have someone who wants to know on what you think about using salt tablets, James.
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, I've had friends who used to run marathons, triathlons, and they would always cramp. And after using salt tablets before and during their exercise, they never cramp ever again. And so if people are having cramping that is being reduced or eliminated by using salt tablets, or they exercise a lot, using salt tablets can potentially help reduce things like muscle spasms, muscle cramps, fatigue, and even potentially collapsing or heat stroke during exercise. So I think for a certain amount of people, it absolutely is a good idea.
Yeah. So what's your takeaway for listeners, and especially listeners who maybe are under doctor's orders to limit their salt intake?
Yeah. So really the takeaway is, if you're having symptoms of potential salt deficiency, like the dizziness, like the muscle spasms and cramps, heart palpitations, or an increase in heart rate, and you and those symptoms go away by integrating the salt that you're craving, that should tell you something. And if you're suffering from all these symptoms by limiting and consciously restricting your salt intake, you should have that discussion with your doctor. Maybe tell him to read the book, The Salt Fix, to see the evidence for himself or herself. And so it's just something that I hope people are more educated and they don't fear this natural mineral.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
James D. Nicolantonio is the author of The Salt Fix, Why the Experts Got It All Wrong and How Eating More Might Save Your Life. Thanks to Michelle Johnson and to Naija Ellison for producing the program. This is the Ideas Network.